Part 3, Chapter 31. 5 years and 2 months after Lester Klump Sr. and Lester Klump Jr. first set foot in the Hokut house, they finished the renovation. The ordeal was over, and the results were splendid. Once I accepted their languid pace, I settled in for the long haul and worked hard selling ad copy. Twice during the last year of the project, I had unwisely attempted to live in the house and somehow exist in the midst of the debris. In doing so, I had little trouble with the dust, the paint fumes, the blocked hallways, the erratic electricity and hot water, and the absence of heating and air conditioning. But I could never adapt to the early morning hammers and handsaws. They were not early birds, which, as I learned, was unusual for contractors, but they did start in earnest each morning by 8:30. I really enjoyed sleeping until 10. The arrangement didn't work, and after each attempt to live in the big house, I sneaked back across the gravel drive and returned to the apartment where things were somewhat quieter. Only once in 5 years was I unable to pay the Klumps on time. I refused to borrow money for the project, though Stan Atcavage was always ready to loan it. After work each Friday, I would sit down with Lester Sr., usually on a makeshift plywood table in a hallway, and over a cold beer we would tally up the labor and materials for the week, add 10%, and I would write him a check. I filed his records away, and for the first 2 years kept a running total of the cost of the renovation. After 2 years, though, I stopped adding the weekly to the cumulative. I didn't want to know what it was costing. I was broke, but I didn't care. The money pit had been sealed off. I had teetered on the brink of insolvency, dodged it, and now I could begin stashing it away again. And I had something magnificent to show for the time, effort, and investment. The house had been built around 1900 by Dr. Miles Hokut. It had a distinctive Victorian style, with two high-gabled roofs in the front, a turret that ran up four levels, and wide covered porches that swept around the house on both sides. Over the years, the Hokuts had painted the house blue and yellow, and Mr. Klump Sr. had even found an area of bright red under three coats of newer paint. I played it safe and stayed with white and beige and light brown trim. The roof was copper. Outside, it was a rather plain Victorian, but I would have years to jazz it up. Inside, the heart pine floors on all three levels had been restored to their original beauty. Walls had been removed, rooms and hallways opened up. The Klumps had finally been forced to remove the entire kitchen and build another from the basement up. The fireplace in the living room had actually collapsed under the pressure of relentless jackhammering. I turned the library into a den and knocked out more walls so that upon entering the front foyer, you could see through the den to the kitchen in the distance. I added windows everywhere. The house had originally been built like a cave. Mr. Klump admitted he had never tasted champagne, but he happily chugged it down as we completed our little ceremony on a side porch. I handed him what I hoped would be his last check. We shook hands, posed for a photograph by Wiley Meek, then popped the cork. Many of the rooms were bare. It would take years to properly decorate the place, and it would require the assistance of someone with far more knowledge and taste than I possessed. Half empty, though, the house was still spectacular. It needed a party. I borrowed $2,000 from Stan and ordered wine and champagne from Memphis. I found a suitable caterer from Tupelo, the only one in Clanton specialized in ribs and catfish, and I wanted something a bit classier. The official invitation list of 300 included everybody I knew in town and a few I did not. The unofficial list was comprised of those who had heard me say, "We'll have a huge party when it's finished." I invited Bibi and three of her friends from Memphis. I invited my father, but he was too worried about inflation and the bond market. I invited Miss Callie and Esau, Reverend Thurston Small, Claude, three clerks from the courthouse, two school teachers, an assistant basketball coach, a teller at the bank, and the newest lawyer in town. That made a total of 12 blacks, and I would have invited more if I had known more. I was determined to have the first integrated party in Clanton. Harry Rex brought moonshine and a large platter of chitlins that almost broke up the festivities. Bubba Crockett and the Foxhole Gang arrived stoned and ready to party. Mr. Mitlow wore the only tuxedo. Piston made an appearance and was seen leaving through the back door with a carry-out bag filled with rather expensive finger food. Woody Gates and the Country Boys played for hours on a side porch. The Clumps were there with all their laborers. It was a fine moment for them, and I made sure they got all the credit. Lucian Wilbanks arrived late and was soon in a heated argument about politics with Senator Theo Morton, whose wife Rexella told me it was the grandest party she had seen in Clanton in 20 years. Our new sheriff, Trice McNatt, dropped by with several of his uniformed deputies. T.R. Meredith had died of colon cancer the year before. One of my favorites, Judge Reuben V. Attlee, held court in the den with colorful stories about Dr. Miles Hocutt. Reverend Millard Stark of the First Baptist Church stayed only 10 minutes and left quietly when he realized alcohol was being served. Reverend Cargrove of the First Presbyterian Church was seen drinking champagne and appeared to have a taste for it. Baggy passed out in a second-floor bedroom, where I found him the next afternoon. The Stooks twins, who owned the hardware store, showed up in brand-new matching overalls. They were 70 years old, lived together, never married, and wore matching overalls every day. There was no dress requirement. The invitation said, "Open attire." The front lawn was covered with two large white tents, and at times the crowd spilled from under them. The party began at 1 p.m. Saturday afternoon and would have gone past midnight if the wine and food had lasted. By 10, Woody Gates and his band were exhausted. There was nothing left to drink but a few warm beers, nothing to eat but a few tortilla chips, and nothing left to see. The house had been thoroughly seen and enjoyed. Late the next morning, I scrambled eggs for Bibi and her friends. We sat on the front porch and drank coffee and admired the mess made just hours before. It took me a week to clean up.